Bonjour, merci Justin. Bonjour chers collègues. Il est un grand plaisir d'être avec vous aujourd'hui à ce colloque pour aborder la question de la politique étrange canadienne dans un monde multipolaire. Thank you for being here on a Friday morning, cold Friday morning. The focus by what I would like to begin my comments on is as students of international politics, be it political scientists, diplomatic historians, political sociologists, practitioners, by the very nature of international politics and foreign policy, we have a tendency to focus on the principal actors in the international political system, which, of course, are states. And the thing that I think is important, and my remarks this morning will be largely drawn from international relations theory, is that states inhabit a particular type of world. They don't exist in a vacuum. They live on planet Earth, but planet Earth and the international political system in which they occupy has some very clear characteristics that I think are important to any understanding, including Canadian foreign policy. In fact, when you look at the amount of scholarly literature that has been produced over the years on Canadian foreign policy, disproportionately, one would come away with the impression that if you're trying to understand Ottawa's external behavior and its engagement with the international community, all you need to do is look at sort of state-level Canadian factors or factors specific to individual leaders, political preferences, bureaucratic preferences, etc. And that's not meant as a critique, it's meant as a reality, because Canada, after all, is not a great power, nor is it likely to be anytime soon. And as such, there's not much of an effort to try and examine the impact the world Canada lives in on the formulation and conduct of foreign policy. I think that's a grave error, and I think we need to understand that it's not simply about great powers like the United States, or others, past or present or future. But the fact is, the world in which states inhabit is important. In the late 1950s, a seminal book for any student of international politics came out called Man, the State, and War by Kenneth Waltz. And Waltz was interested, as I think many of us know, in asking, why does war occur? Why does it seemingly occur all the time, across generations, across periods? And he pointed out that most political philosophers and international scholars of diplomatic history and political science had said, well, you know, two common explanations, one of which was there's something inherently evil about our DNA, that we're, you know, bad people, that somehow we've got a warlike capacity biologically. And the other explanation was, well, you need to look at the political complexion of individual states. If states are the key actors, you know, you need to look at that, because some are more warlike or not. And Waltz did a very effective job back in 1959 of suggesting to us, no, if you're looking at the taproot, the common denominator for why war occurs in the international political system, it's because you need to look at the structure of the world in which states occupy. And that structure, as he brought to our attention in 1959, is that it's anarchic. It's a decentralized realm. There's no overarching central authority through which to regulate the behavior of states. Now, that's a very simple but enormously powerful proposition, which he later used in 1979 to produce what most scholars consider the best book ever written on international politics, Theory of International Politics. And whether you subscribe to a position that some call neorealism or structural realism, or whatever you call it, the fundamental insight of that work was that states, yes, they're the most important, but certainly not the sole actors. But the fact is, this world in which they live, this anarchic structure, has profound implications, consequences, and incentives for states that occupy that world and directly impact their behavior. If I may be allowed, I'd like to offer a few observations this morning that will hopefully contribute to the direction of our conversation today. At the end of the Cold War, 1991, and the close of the bipolar period, we entered a world that most observers called a unipolar period or unipolarity. And some are suggesting today that we are or have already shifted towards a multipolar world. And it's important if that's indeed the case, whether the shift has occurred or is in the process of occurring, because I think most people recognize that power shifts over time. It's not a static. There's differential rates in terms of the growth of power of states. But what does this mean for Canadian foreign policy? I think what would be useful for us, before turning to talk about some of the chief characteristics of a multipolar world for, and what it might mean for Canada, is to consider what are the principal characteristics of our current system, which I think, regardless of how you empirically measure quantitatively or qualitatively, the world is still decidedly unipolar. But it isn't going to stay unipolar forever, I think that's fair to say. There's a significant and increasingly sophisticated body of international relations theory scholarship that speaks to questions of the emergence, the impact, and the durability of the unipolar system. So what do we mean by unipolar? Well, obviously, the most important and chief characteristic of such a system is that there's a gross imbalance of power in the world. There's only one great power. Currently, some would, and most would point to the United States. You can also say that there's an absence in some respects of a sort of imminent hostile state-level threat to the survival of that great power. And what we have found post-1991 and what you would expect to find is that the sole remaining great power has had increased influence, far less restraints on its external behavior. It has done, in many respects, what it has wanted to do in the international political system. Alliances in this particular world, and this is interesting because you think about the foreign policy of George Bush, think of the foreign policy of Barack Obama. Barack Obama came in promising in one of his key central foreign policy goals was to restore the transatlantic relationship, the European, the NATO relationship. But most international relations theorists will tell you that alliances add very little to the power of the singular great power in international unipolar world, and therefore great powers can not necessarily ignore, but certainly don't need to regularly or consistently court states in alliance settings. When you look, for example, and you ask, what does this mean for Canada, this world that emerged at the end of the Cold War? Well, I think the most important thing to point out is that the remaining, the sole great power was not the Soviet Union. It was the United States. Had it been the Soviet Union, who was not what we would regard as a well-established partner and friend over the years, it could have been a very different world. But the dynamics of the system post-1991 have clearly eroded Canada's ability to influence the United States, which frankly was not very powerful in the bipolar world either, except on issues of tremendous need to the United States and in the absence of attractive alternatives. I think a key constraint that's often overlooked is Canada's ability to convince the United States to take a significant interest in and make a meaningful commitment to pressing issues in the international political system. While certain issues which suggest or perhaps demand international action may be compelling to Canada, there is no guarantee. Indeed, the incentive system built into this world for the sole great power is to act far more circumscribed and less forceful than was the case in the bipolar world. Whereas in a bipolar environment where decisions were sort of very straightforward, taken on the basis of a competitive zero-sum calculus, that compelling dynamic, intimately responsible for shaping a wide range of Canadian foreign policy behaviors, no longer prevails in the unipolar world. The net effect for Canadian foreign policy post-1991 is fairly clear. The attainment of key policy goals by Ottawa should prove to be more difficult to secure. In a unipolar system, Canada has considerably more opportunity and less constraints on its foreign policy behavior. In fact, I'm fond of making the argument that if you go back and you look at the foreign policy behavior of the Chrétien administration, of the Chrétien government, and Paul Martin and Stephen Harper, and now Monsieur Trudeau, And people are fond of linking, merci beaucoup, are fond of linking, if you will, the governments of Mr. Trudeau and Mr. Martin, not only because they're liberal governments, but they look at the chief characteristics of their foreign policy, perhaps best embodied by former Minister of Foreign Affairs, Lloyd Axworthy, and they contrast that to Canada's foreign behavior under Stephen Harper, and they see sharp contrasts. They see a world of difference. I see a world of similarity. And I see a world of similarity because the forces that are impacting the development, the implementation of Canadian foreign policy since the Cold War impact political leaders regardless of political persuasion. In other words, yes, are there clearly subjective factors? Are there political preferences at work in Ottawa? Absolutely. But the forces, the world in which Canada has had to live since 1991 hasn't fundamentally changed from government to government. And what we're seeing is Canada has considerably more opportunity, far less constraints on its foreign policy behavior. In the current environment, the structural reality of politics, international politics, is that the system is more permissive in character. It allows states with significant material capabilities, like Canada, to become more actively engaged. However that is championed, however that is characterized. So when people talk about divergent foreign policy pursuits, be it soft power or hard power, be it Canada's role in Afghanistan that was significantly changed under the government of Conservative Prime Minister Stephen Harper, whether it's Kosovo, Somalia, Libya, we should not see a lot of difference there. The variation is not sharp. If we're moving to a multipolar world, as is the suggestion, or if we've arrived at a multipolar world, as we've talked about today, I think it's important that people go back before they start to prescribe what Canada can or can't do and spend a little time revisiting what international relations scholars have advanced as the chief characteristics of what a multipolar world is. A multipolar world, now much of this scholarship draws from microeconomic theory and it also draws from diplomatic history. But the literature shows that in a world with three or more great powers, so if somebody's counting today, in 2016, do you say China is one, the United States is one, the European Community is one, you know, Russia under Putin is one, you know, other potential regions or nations. I'd encourage you to take a look at that because what the leading voices of international relations theory scholarship have suggested is that a multipolar world is very unclear, uncertain, and profoundly more dangerous for international relations and the conduct of international relations than is the world we currently live in or the world we occupy between 1945 and 1991. And there's a whole host of reasons for that. I'm not going to get into them this morning. I'd be glad to chat with you after about them. What it means for Canada is that Canadian foreign policy gets more complicated in very simple terms because there's no clarity, no regularized clarity about how the workings of a multipolar world are set. And there's a whole variety of reasons for that, but it's more problematic for the conduct of Canadian foreign policy. There's still going to be tremendous flexibility, it's still going to be decidedly permissive in character, but it's going to be inherently more problematic to be successful in that environment. So, thanks, Justin.
Merci beaucoup. Merci beaucoup.